Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And in this episode, we're going to be just touching on a couple quick comic news, TV comic news, and movie comic news items. And then we're going to get into the making of a comic fan. Basically, we're going to go over the stories that we think you need to read if you want to become a comic fan, or if someone you already are a comic fan, but someone you know wants to get interested in comics. So what are the stories we think that you should recommend, the storylines, the books, and things like that. So, but as I said, before we get into that, we're going to talk just a quick minute about some
news. We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
So yesterday, as we record this, DC released their solicits for July, which is the second of the rebirth, second month, I should say, of their rebirth titles. So there's a link in the show notes for an article on Newsarama. Actually, two articles. One is the full solicits you can go and read for themselves, and another is something Newsarama does every month when the solicits come out. Well, just about every month, they'll do a top 10 list, things they learned from the solicits. So it's pretty interesting. You can go and read about that there. Likewise, Marvel has released their solicits for July, and you really start seeing the battle lines for their Civil War II event that's starting off being drawn, kind of getting an idea of which heroes are going to be on what side. So again, there's a link in the show notes. This time the link is to the solicits, the full July Marvel solicits over on Comic Book Resources. And then there's another link also for another article at Comic Book Resources that is a little more in-depth, talks about the speculation that there's a big hero death that's going to happen, and also touches on the Maria Hill trial that's going on, that kind of starts off the whole Civil War with the, the event at Pleasant Hill, standoff at Pleasant Hill that kind of kicks off the Civil War too. So you can go and check out that as well. And then the last bit of comic news, late today, as we record this, Tuesday, May 19th, the nominees for the Eisner Awards were announced. Being a big DC fan, I was kind of disappointed there wasn't really any DC nominees, with the possible exception of Amanda Conner for a Best Cover Artist. And there was a couple of, like, Vertigo. There was a Vertigo short story that Tom King wrote that was on there. Marvel didn't really have much either. They had somebody nominated for a cover artist as well. And then, but their Silver Surfer series got a couple nominees. So I've always been a big fan of Silver Surfer, but I, to be honest, I really do not like Mike Allred's art. I just feel it. The storytelling is terrible from panel to panel. Very thick lines, very static, doesn't flow well. I just never understood the acclaim his art gets. And so for me, it basically makes the book unreadable, which is a shame because I'm a fan of Dan Slott's writing. And, I've heard a lot of good things about Silver Surfer. I mean, maybe I'll give it a try at this point. You know, I don't want to seem like a hypocrite or, you know, but I mean, I should be able to read what I like, and everybody's telling me it's so good, but I wish it had a different artist. I think I would enjoy it a lot more. So anyway, that does it for TV. I'm sorry, for comic news.
My name is Kara Zor-El.
In TV news, so the Supergirl season finale was on, was it Monday? Was it last night?
Yeah, last night.
Did you watch it already?
Vaguely watched it, where my wife was having a game night with some friends, so I was watching it, but not paying close attention to it. Either way, though, it seemed very vague, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but there's not much to spoil. It was kind of a one-note show. Nothing. I was expecting more of a big surprise to kind of push the network to renew it for another season, but I don't know anymore.
There was so it didn't end on a cliffhanger or anything like that?
I mean, there it did, but it didn't really make me jump out my seat or gasp or anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a link in the show notes for that as well. An article on comic book resources talking about the end of the series. It's a spoiler-filled article, to be sure. So if you don't want the season finale spoiled for you, maybe wait. Watch the season finale first and then go check out the article. How do you feel just overall? I mean, you pretty much watched the whole first season, right?
Yeah, I watched the whole season.
Do you think it's the show should come back for another season? You think it's worthy of a second season?
You know, it's tough because it had its great moments, but I honestly, really thinking about it, maybe it wasn't necessarily Supergirl making those moments. You had Martian Manhunter, and then a couple of really good villains to pop up, and then not to mention the best episode by far was the one with the Flash, and you know it took the Flash. So I was thinking about that today. Is this show worthy of a second season? And the only reason I really thought about it hard was because I was expecting at least the final episode to go out with the bang to really say, you know, we're going to push the boundaries next season or something. Give me some sort of hope that it's going to get better. But, it just kind of stayed its course. And that was a little disappointing to me.
So second season, yes or no? Bottom line it for me, Manny.
They haven't said anything, and I doubt it. So I'm going to say no.
But do you think it deserves one? Do you personally, or do you think it needs to go away?
You know, I'm still very conflicted, because if it did come back for a second season, I'd watch it. I'm conflicted. I mean, I'd like to see it, because it's nice to have Supergirl on TV. But at the same time, I don't feel like it's living up to the proper to the rest of the TV shows.
Okay. Let's think about this, though. Now, there were things about Arrow, when we did our Arrow spotlight show, there were things about Arrow in the second season that weren't that great, that they improved upon. And it's not just Arrow. We can look back at other seasons. And the show that always sticks out like a sore thumb to me when we talk about how much better it gets after the first season, or maybe even the first season and a half, is Star Trek The Next Generation. I mean, the first season was okay, but at times it was so hokey, and you know the characters weren't developed or didn't have like exactly the right direction. The outfits that they put Counselor Troy in were terrible. Man, it's just at times that first season is painful to watch, and then it turned into like the best Star Trek in the opinion of a lot of people. And it would have been a shame if they canceled it after the first season because it got so good. So. It's a comic book character on TV, so I personally hope it comes back, even though I've only seen the first episode. I personally hope it comes back for another season because, you know, the thing is about these shows, like, they pretty much had the whole season, like, filmed, before they started airing. So it's kind of, you can't really judge, like, fan reaction and see how things really appear on the screen until it's, like, airs, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing to watch it in the vacuum of, you know, the network filming it and watching it themselves. But until you get, like, fan reaction and you can kind of look back and, you know, with time, see the progression of it, the producers and writers can see, oh, we made a mistake there. Let's tweak this. Let's tweak that. You know what I'm saying?
No, I completely agree with you because that's what's really conflicting about it, because I think what they probably learned is that it works better in a multiverse type situation where because I felt a little bit more comfortable with the show after I knew that it existed in the same multiverse system, I guess you can call it, as Flash, and there are future possibilities of them meeting up again, or even seeing a doppelganger on Earth 2. Okay, Kara Danvers. So, no, there's a lot of potential there, but I just don't know, with the fact that it's on CBS and everything else is on, like, CW. So, that's what's conflicting about it. I mean, I liked it from week to week. I didn't love it like some of the other shows.
Now, the one other bit of TV news that we should mention is that and I'm sure you saw this, Manny. There's a new Gotham teaser trailer, and it shows Azrael.
Yeah, I saw that.
What'd you think?
I got to see more of it, because let me tell you, this is a bit of a spoiler. Well, not really. This week, on this week's episode of Gotham, Hugo Strange actually releases Mr. Freeze. And I had so many issues with his cold suit. It's not even funny. My biggest complaint is, I'm sure you saw the leaked images of when they were filming of what the Freeze suit looked like.
No, actually, I didn't pay any attention.
Because the first thing I noticed was, like, oh, he's probably walking, and he has his helmet off, but the suit has no helmet.
What?
And yeah, it has no helmet. He's walking around in it, and it's a whole suit, but his head is exposed, which makes no sense, because Hugo Strange told him directly, if you're any of your body goes beyond this certain temperature, you're gonna die. Yet his head is exposed, and it's really terribly done.
Wow, that's I don't know, interesting, I guess.
No, I'll send you a picture of it, and it just looks really incomplete. I just feel like some of these characters are being forced upon the show just to I don't know. But Azrael, I have a feeling that might work a little bit better, just because it ties a little bit more into what they were doing the first half of the second season.
She with you.
I thought she was with you.
Now for some movie news. We should welcome Jaden in. Jaden, say hi to everybody.
Hey guys, sorry I'm late.
All right, so movie news here. Willem Dafoe joins the cast of Justice League. Did you guys see this news just came out today?
Yeah,
I saw that.
Okay, I have absolutely no idea who he's going to play, but I'm going to just, based on the fact that he's getting old and his face is starting to look like an old catcher's mitt, I'm going to go with a way out of left field, totally shot in the dark guess as to his casting, and I'm going to say Hi, Father, from Jack Kirby, Fourth World, you know, kind of the light or good version of Darkseid. That's my guess. You have a guess, Jaden?
I have no idea. I only really see him as a villain in most movies. Like, I just think of Green Goblin from the Spider-Man movies, so I have absolutely no idea who he would play if he's being a good guy.
Manny, what's your guess?
Highfather was not in my, I didn't think about that, but I honestly, no, I don't. I've been thinking about it all day. Who the hell could he play? Because he signed on for both movies, so he has to be important enough to be in both films. But as far as William Dafoe as a good guy, I'm kind of worried, because this might be one of those weird takes that Zack Snyder is going to do on a DC character.
You know, somebody else just popped into my head. You know, we'll say quote-unquote good guy. He could be playing General Sam Lane. Technically supposed to be a good guy, but as we saw in the Superman Unchained series, you know, he definitely was at odds with Superman.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I could kind of see that. I mean, they don't really go for people who look exactly like their characters in the book for the actors, it seems like, in these movies, so I could see that.
Yeah. One other bit of movie news real quick. So, Themyscira, the Paradise Island, the home of Wonder Woman, there's a link in the show notes to an article on Bleeding Cool. I guess an Italian news station or news affiliate or something got some footage of the filming being done on the Wonder Woman movie of what Themyscira is supposedly going to look like. It's in Italian, so, you know, be forewarned, you're not going to be able to understand it, but you can, if you want to go and check out the footage, you certainly can.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in permanent condition. If you spill soda on it, it drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics.
Oh.
Yes, you are quite correct to gasp.
All right, so now to the heart of the episode, Making of a Comic Fan. So we are going to each nominate 7 to 10 books or runs or things that we think, if someone came to us and said, I want to become a comic book fan, I want to know where comics have come from, what should I read? And so we're going to give our 25. We're going to make a list of 25. Now, there are five things or runs or whatever, five nominees that I felt were so important and influential. They were gimmies. So we're going to start with those five, and then Jaden, Manny, and I are going to fill in the remaining 20. And this is when I started doing it. Like, I was like, okay, 5 to 7. I'll come up with 5 to 7, and then, you know, we'll go from there. Because if each of us comes up with 7, that's 21, and we need 20. So, but man, I started going through, and I was like, oh, what about this? What about this? But there's so many. Like, it was so hard to narrow it down. And I feel like I'm leaving off things that are like super influential. I mean, maybe you guys will have some that I haven't, and I'm going to mention some other things that aren't on my list as we go through, just because, I mean, it's kind of did like we decided to do this as a Making a Comic Fan, not as a 25 like most important comics of all time, because that list would not necessarily intersect, you know, or 25 best. The 25 best comic stories of all time might not necessarily intersect. I mean, this is going to have some books on it that are maybe a little more like elementary or introductory, because you're trying to get people hooked, right? So you want it to be a good story. But on the other hand, if it was, you know, 25 most influential, like I said, it would maybe have different things. I'll mention one real quick, which is Mouse. You know, here's a graphic novel. For those of you not familiar with it, it tells the story of, it's the true story of a Holocaust survivor from World War II. So this guy that wrote it, Spiegelman, Art Spiegelman is his name, he talked to his dad, who was interned at one of these concentration camps, and heard about his experiences and wanted to tell the story. But, you know, he didn't want it to be like gruesome and, you know, terrible, whatever. So what he did was he changed the characters into animals. So all the Polish Jews were mice, and the Germans were cats, and the Americans were dogs, and the British were dolphins, and so on like that. And it tells a story, and it won a Pulitzer Prize. It's taught in many colleges across the United States in their English literature classes, and it's kind of universally lauded as an incredible work. And really a shining example of what you can do with graphic storytelling and sequential storytelling. And that's not going to be on, unless one of you guys has it, it's not going to be on our list, because I don't necessarily feel it's something where I could give it to somebody to read and they would think, oh yeah, now I want to read comic books. You know, I want to go read about Superman. They might read it and enjoy it and think it's great, but I don't think it's a way to get somebody hooked on comics. So keep in mind that that's the way we're approaching this, as a way to get people hooked on comics. Or if somebody comes to me and says, I want to get into comics, which happens, you know, more than you would think. Hey, I want to read comics. What should I read? What can you recommend? So that's the way we're approaching this. So first off, I should read off the titles that are kind of the gimmies. And I'm sure that a lot of you are going to recognize these titles. So we'll start off with Watchmen by Alan Moore. That's going to be our number one. And the next title is going to be Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is kind of the really first mega crossover in the history of comics for a whole universe. It set the stage for 20 years of DC continuity. The next title I'm gonna mention as a gimme is the Marvels title, which is was put out by Marvel Comics in the mid '90s, fully painted by Alex Ross. It's really what put Alex Ross on the map as far as an artist, and it does a great job of really capturing the feel of the Marvel universe. The next title is a must, and that's The Walking Dead. You know, by far the most influential independent comic being produced nowadays. I mean, people who've never picked up a comic book in their life know about The Walking Dead because of the TV show. So that's widespread influence that can't be ignored. And then the final gimme is The Dark Knight Returns, which was a classic Batman story. Came out in 1986, and much like Mouse, it was very critically acclaimed, really showed what the art form could be, and it also cited by so many comic creators, so many people working in the industry today, as having influence on their work, and it's really responsible for the kind of the grown-up feel that comics have nowadays, especially. I feel it directly influenced Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight Returns, so it wasn't something that could be left off the list. What do you guys think about these five gimmies? Do you agree with all of them, Manny?
Yeah, no doubt. I do feel that maybe you should add one more to it, just because of how often I see it on the top five graphic novels of the last 2 years. The Killing Joke by Alan Moore.
You can nominate that when it's your. I considered that.
I'm just saying because that book is constantly on Barnes and Nobles and just in general, number one, number two, and I mean, I don't understand how a book can be so relevant after so many years, and it's so controversial. But anyway, back to your original point. Yeah, definitely Watchmen. That really flipped the script on comic books when it came out. It's an amazing book.
Yeah, that one, that's kind of in the same vein as Dark Knight Returns, really showed what the medium could be, and it influenced so many people, so many comic creators working today cite that, you know, and it's a really incredible story.
No, most definitely, because I mean, you see all the flaws in the heroes. And I loved it when I finally got a chance to read it. And then, I mean, I actually haven't had a chance to take a look at Marvel's. I've heard about it. But as far as The Walking Dead, it just really shows you what an independent book can do if done correctly. I mean, it hit the market at the right time. You're having movies like Dawn of the Dead. And, I mean, so much zombie love. During those early years, and it caught right at the right time, and not only that, I mean, great stories, great characters, and Dark Knight Returns. What are there left to say on that? It's influenced a bunch of films already, animated, and just even Zack Snyder's take on Batman.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If there's no Dark Knight Returns, which maybe we'd be better off, there'd be no, you know, complaints about, oh, the New 52 is all one note, too dark, you know, Batman movies too dark, you know, works for Batman, but not for the rest of the hero, you know, the complaints about Man of Steel not being right. I mean, all that you can trace back to success, in a way, the success of Dark Knight Returns and trying to capture that lightning in a bottle again, but it not working with heroes other than Batman. So
I will say, though, on Crisis on Infinite Earths, maybe there's a couple of other books you may want to read before that, because it's pretty deep.
Yeah,
and I think you may want to get to know a couple of the characters beforehand.
Yeah, you're definitely being thrown into the deep end of the pool, but I think it's if you just take it as a story and kind of just, even if, you know, one or two issues might be confusing, you'll catch on as you go along. Because even when I first read it, even though I'd been a comic reader for, you know, 3 or 4 years, I didn't know who a lot of the characters were at the time. You know, I was only 10 when it came out, or 10 or 11 when it came out, so there were still a lot of people I didn't know necessarily. So what do you think about the five gimmies, Jaden?
I think that they are pretty standard. I mean, when I saw this list, that there was none of the five that I was like, oh wow, I can't believe that's here. Like, Walking Dead, for sure, like you said, it's so influential. Like, you can't walk up to somebody on the street and them not know the name of The Walking Dead. Crisis on Infinite Earths, kind of like, I think it was probably one of the higher points for DC, and kind of put DC, like, really up there, and made him one of the, I think it was what put him ahead of Marvel at the time. And Watchmen is great. Dark Knight Returns, super influential. Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked out Marvel's, but I've seen a ton of the art, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, you guys, if you guys haven't read Marvel's, you really need to. I mean, as much as we bash on Marvel these days, I mean, it's a great story. It was groundbreaking at the time. You know, like I said, it put Alex Ross on the map. It's definitely a series that, like, if somebody just asked me, okay, I want to read one Marvel book that will help me understand what the feel and tone of the Marvel universe is all about, it would be that book. Unfortunately, the feel and tone of the universe isn't the same as it was in that book. It's kind of lost some of its luster, in my opinion. It's gotten too convoluted and too, I don't know, it doesn't have that same nostalgic feel that was captured so well in that Marvel's title. So, all right, who wants to give their list first? How about you, Jaden? Let's hear your titles and your thoughts behind putting them on the list.
All right, so these aren't in any particular order, but and I didn't really pick these. Like you said, it wasn't the most influential or the most like influential. Yeah. So I have Forever Evil, the Nightwing New 52 arc.
Well, hold on. First arc. Give me the title and then tell me why you picked it.
Okay. Forever Evil. I mean, I think I heard a lot of hate for this. I really, really enjoy the story though. And I think that even though there's all of the separate titles that you can read along with them, I think that the story itself reads very well as a complete story. And I think that most stories are made by their villains, and I love the Crime Syndicate a lot in that story.
All right.
My next one is the first arc of Nightwing New 52, Traps and Trapezes. I think that this, I didn't really hear much about this book, but I think that this is when Kyle Higgins first started on it, and this book is really good. I think it's Eddie Barrows on art, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's right. Yeah,
and that art works so well for the feel of this arc. It's it's mostly in the circus, and his art really works well with that, and his Nightwing just looks great. Another book that I read a while ago, I picked up the graphic novel for Flash Rebirth, and I wasn't really caught up or reading that many comics at the time, so I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I remember I read through like the first issue of it in the graphic novel, and I was really sunk into it. And I've heard that there's a lot of, that this is a pretty good story from a lot of people, so I was thinking that this would probably be a good one also. Also, Blackest Night. I think that even though this has a lot of side stories as well, I think this is also a pretty good story, especially if you're interested in Green Lantern. I think this is one of the better, if not the best, Green Lantern arc, in my opinion. And it's really cool. I really like the new All the Lantern Corps. Like, if any of you just started reading recently and didn't know that, like, there wasn't always all these Lantern Corps, like, Blackest Night's really a must-read also. I have Harbinger from Valiant. I remember it took me way too long to read this book. I remember when I started reading, once I got into it, it didn't take me very long, but I kept hearing about all these great things about it and how Joshua Dysart, his writing was amazing, and I think it's somewhere around 25 issues, and man, it's not long enough. I wish it kept going for like 100 or
plus a couple zero issues. Well, the story continues in Imperium, but it's not exactly. I mean, some of the same characters, some not. You know, we're not going to spoil it, but
yeah. And my last one on the list is Thief of Thieves, Volume 1, Issues 1 through 7. If I was going to recommend one comic book to a person who didn't read comic books and wasn't really that familiar with the medium, this would probably be it. I think that Thief of Thieves is usually pretty short reads, but it's about as close to a TV show as you're going to get in a comic, and just the writing's so good. I love the feel of the whole book.
All right. I think we'll definitely have some things to debate on Jaden's list, but we'll let you go, Manny. What do you got?
Okay. Well, I'll start with the one I immediately had started talking about, The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, and artwork by Brian Bolin. I mean, this is almost an Elseworlds story that ended up somehow making it I guess, into continuity until now, where it's being taken out. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they took it out in, you know, Batgirl of Burnside. It was something happened, and they said, oh, it was implanted memories, blah, blah, blah. But then, like we were talking about earlier in the episode about the DC solicits, it specifically references Barbara Gordon as having been Oracle. So if the Killing Joke didn't happen, she never would have been paralyzed, and she wouldn't care that somebody else was taking the codename Oracle and selling these secrets. But she does care because she has, in the Rebirth continuity, she was Oracle, so I don't know. I don't know. The answer is we don't know at this point. So, but yeah, definitely influential. So, yeah.
I mean, some of the best storytelling I've ever read, from it gives you an actual origin of the Joker. Although later in the book, he does say, when it comes to my past, I prefer multiple choice. And it has one of the best lines I've ever read in comics, which was, all it takes to reduce a sane man to lunacy is one bad day. I love that line.
Shades of Falling Down with Michael Douglas.
Yeah. It's almost, and you can tell that's where they took for Christopher Nolan's, Batman, madness is like gravity, all it takes is a little push.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of influences there for Heath Ledger's Joker, and I think that was referenced in a couple of documentaries. So that's my first one, and then next I would have to say Geoff Johns Justice League New 52, from when it first started to now. Just really good introduction to the characters. You get Darkseid, and I think it's great. And so you get Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Cyborg, I mean, just the whole cast. So yeah, Justice League. And then I'm gonna go with Harley Quinn, Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti, and artwork by Chad Hardin. Just because of, I mean, if you're looking for something that's in pop culture today, it's Harley Quinn. Since issue zero, this book has just taken off, and it never looked back. And just how much money would you have if you had a dollar for every Harley Quinn cosplayer you saw at the shows?
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, every issue you can read it has a story arc, but at the same time, you can pick up any issue and still be entertained. And a lot of cameos, Power Girl, Poison Ivy, Batman even makes an appearance in one. And then in the later issues now, she actually confronts the Joker, and I think it was a really great moment for her. Issue 24, I think it was. So definitely Harley Quinn is on my list. And then also Archer and Armstrong, Fred Van Lente, and Miko Suyen. I think there's a couple of other artists within the run also.
Yeah, I think, but Clayton Henry launched it.
Oh, okay. And I think, I don't know who's doing it now, even though I just finished reading number two. I mean, just fun. You don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know what kind of crazy adventure, from aliens to dinosaurs to being stuck in almost like an old people's home with people from the 80s, Biggie, yeah, the Hotel Tupac, California. I mean, Justin Bieber, what else is there? Right now, they're in some crazy adventure where Armstrong forgot that he stuffed Bacchus in his magical satchel, and after 3,000 years he goes back in there looking for a bottle of booze, and he gets his revenge. So you never know where these two are going to end up, and it's a great ride. very entertaining, and I think if you're looking for entertaining books, really good quality writing, and just to have a good time, Archer Armstrong is definitely the way to go. And then I didn't know how to separate these, because they kind of all go hand in hand, and that was Bloodshot. Because I feel if you read Bloodshot, I think it goes right into The Valiant and to Bloodshot Reborn, because putting all three of them together is really what makes it to me really special. So I don't know how you want me to do that.
We'll call it the Valiant Bloodshot Trilogy. How about that?
All right, great. That works. Because you see Bloodshot as the machine that he was created. Then you see his transformation in The Valiant, and then you see the human side of him in Bloodshot Reborn. And now in The Analog Man, you get to see a little bit deeper into that, and that's just amazing. From his really awesome powers with the nanites that he has, to fighting the nanites, getting rid of them, to realizing that he can actually live with them. Very good quality storytelling there. Artwork's always been really good. And then how many do I have already? One,
that's
two,
five.
Five? We're doing seven, right?
Yeah, I mean, just keep going, man. Do whatever you got, and we'll, you know, edit the list later.
This is a book, I guess, maybe I enjoyed a little too much, and I'm not sure if it's a book maybe I want to recommend that you guys will agree with, but Moon Knight by Warren Ellis. You know, it took me a while to actually pick it up and read it, because I had the files there, but man, once I got started with it, that was just so good. It's about Mark Spector who dies in front of a statue of Khonshu, the moon god, and I guess he gets possessed by him, gets powers. But what's crazy is that what I really, really liked about it is that I guess there's three personalities that he can partake in, and each issue you get a different one. And he's like, oh, that's who he is this time. And so it gives each book almost like a one-shot feel. And it's done really well. Some of Warren Ellis' stuff, like Injection, like I cannot get into at all. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on. But Moon Knight was done really, really well. And issue number one of Moon Knight came out last week. And that was awesome. Just trying to flip through the pages and figure out, is he really Moon Knight? Does he really have powers, or is he crazy? And you're looking for clues either way. And throughout the whole book, you're just trying to figure it out. And by the end of it, you're still up in the air. And I cannot wait for the next issue.
So, but you're nominating the Warren Ellis Moon Knight.
Yes. It continues. Just the character's really good. But yeah, definitely Warren Ellis Moon Knight. Sorry, I kind of got off a little bit.
Warren Ellis did the first six issues, and I agree with you. It was really great. But then, unfortunately, he left. And I'm trying to remember who came on after him. But then I know Cullen Bunn finished it up.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember who came on in between. But the latest one that just came out, the first issue that just came out, was Jeff Lemire.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Who writes, you know, Bloodshot Reborn, so no surprise that you enjoyed it. I haven't read the most recent.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a sucker for $4.99 Marvel number ones, but this one was a must for me, just because of what Warren Ellis did there. And it was because of that I actually picked up his Image book Injection, but I really couldn't get into that as hard as I tried. But it was because of what he did on Moon Knight. And, okay, the last one I'm going to nominate is Dan Jurgens' Death of Superman. I mean, talk about something that, a comic book that hit the mainstream media hard. It was when they found out that DC was going to, quote-unquote, kill Superman. And I think that it was done really, really well, where it was the arrival of Doomsday was done very, very, I guess quietly is what I'm looking for, or just, and then just the way in one of the first panels where he has a bird in his hand and then he just crushes it. It kind of sets the tone that, oh, this guy's pure evil. So, I think, that's definitely a must. And then also what follows afterwards is very important, with, a few different characters trying to replace Superman. And then you get the feel of how important he really is.
So are you nominating the death of Superman or the death and return of Superman?
Both.
All right. So, death and return, then, of Superman.
Yeah.
Not just the death. Yeah, I actually hear a lot of people saying that the return story is actually better, which, at the time, people didn't say, you know. It kind of got a bad rap with the four people coming around, trying to replace them and everything, and people are like, oh, they're just trying to sell books and blah, blah, blah. It's a big trick.
The point is to sell books, too.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, it was poignant, and, you know, his death, and it meant something, and that's what everybody pointed to. But now, looking back on it, more seems like I hear more love for the return of Superman storyline. So those are your picks, huh? At least you got one Marvel book on there. Not bad. What I find interesting, and I knew this was going to happen, is that being that you two are relatively new to comics, it's all, like, more recent stuff.
So, yeah.
And I was thinking more historically, because for me, it's not just about recommending books to people that they'll get hooked on, but I also want it. I mean, to me, a comic fan is someone that also knows where the history of it, you know what I'm saying? You kind of have to have a sense of, like, where these things came from. Because people that just buy the modern books and never go back and read some of the classic stories of the past and have a sense of the history of it, I feel like they're not as invested in a way. And it's easy for them to fall off. Whereas the people that take the time to learn the history, learn what the influential stories are, and, you know, the great runs by certain creators, I just feel like they're more invested, they're more knowledgeable. It makes for, like, a more well-rounded and a more serious comic fan. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So for that reason, I and that's probably why it was a lot harder for me to come up with or to limit myself, because I, you know, was coming up with so many things that I thought, oh, like, this could go on there and that could go on there. So I'm going to start off with some old school stuff. Again, I feel that it's just so important if you want to have an understanding of where things have come from. So I'll start off with Fantastic Four 1 through 100, which is the classic run, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. It held the record for a long time for the longest run with the same creators on a book, until it got passed by Mark Bagley and Brian Michael Bendis on Ultimate Spider-Man. And that's, you know, that's in the 2000s. So for 40 years, this was the longest that a creative team had stayed on a book together. So, and the reason I'm nominating it isn't for the longevity or the consistency, which are good reasons, but just because this book was the flagship title of Marvel when it started out, and it kind of set the tone for the way the universe worked and the way the universe was and the Marvel method of making comics, which was different than anything that had been done before. And so, you know, for all these Marvel Cinematic Universe fans, you know, if they want to know the roots of the story and where the universe started, you know, I think these are the books you need to read. Likewise, I feel Amazing Spider-Man let's say, issue 1 to about 125, I'll say. Because issue 121, 122 was the death of Gwen Stacy storyline. And that's really important. Punisher debuted in 129. Maybe I should extend it to that. Nah, you know, I'll keep it at 125. Much like Fantastic Four, you know, a lot of heroes, a lot of other characters debuted, you know, started off Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, and then Steve Ditko left the book and John Romita Sr. came on the book. And, yeah, this book really showed, if the Fantastic Four showed kind of the fantastical nature, no pun intended, the whimsical nature, the adventurous nature of the Marvel Universe, the family kind of feel, The Amazing Spider-Man was the book that showed that the heroes were flawed. You know, the Fantastic Four had that family dynamic, and they didn't always get along, just like, you know, families don't always get along. But Peter Parker was kind of this everyman character, someone you could relate to. You know, he wasn't this hero who, like, if you looked at the time, compared him to, like, the heroes over on the DC side of things, you know, they were these paragons of virtue, and, you know, they didn't have to deal with everyday problems, you know, and they were just perfect and, you know, made for kind of boring stories. Here was Amazing Spider-Man. Here was Peter Parker, who had, you know, had trouble paying his bills, who had trouble talking to girls, you know, whose girlfriend got killed, you know, out of the blue, out of nowhere. It was so shocking at the time that Jerry Conway wrote that story and killed her. And so, you know, for that reason, I feel like you have to read this run of Amazing Spider-Man. It really gives you a feel for the character, and he, you know, he's such an icon. He's known around the world. So I think those first 125 issues are essential to understanding the character, and they're super influential, just classic stories. So I had to nominate that. For my next, so tough to pick here. You know, I have Harbinger on my list as well. I agree with you, Jaden, on that. So that's one I can eliminate. What should I nominate next? Let's go with Batman Year One. I actually was surprised you didn't put this one on there, Manny.
Actually, there's like two or three that I didn't put on there because I am absolutely sure you're going to put on there. And Batman Year One was actually one of them.
Yeah, so this, after the Crisis on Infinite Earths, when DC kind of streamlined their universe, kind of updated and modernized their heroes, this was Frank Miller, who I go back and forth on his place in comics history as a creator. I think his artwork back in the day, I enjoyed much more than I enjoy his artwork now. And, you know, some of his stuff I really enjoy and some I just don't care for, but there's no denying, and I should say that he didn't do the artwork in your Batman Year One. It's Frank Mazzucchelli. But this was an updated, gritty, I hate to use the word realistic, but maybe more down-to-earth kind of retelling of the Batman origin. Kind of shifted things around in the timeline a little bit, added, kind of retroconned in some other things with Selina Kyle and such. But just based on the Batman that we see in like movies and multimedia today, this is kind of where it came from. So I couldn't not have it on the list. You know, it's not one of my favorite Batman stories, but again, it's just, it was so influential and it kind of informed everything that's come after it. Specifically the most successful of the new 52 titles for DC, which was, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman. And I'm actually surprised you didn't put that, Manny. That really shocked me.
I thought you were definitely going to put the Court of Owls at least.
Yeah, so, I mean, Scott Snyder will, you know, he'll cite Batman Year One as being, you know, extremely influential. on him and informing his Batman run. So, yeah, had to put it on the list. And likewise, for my next pick, which is going to be Man of Steel, this is the 6-issue miniseries by John Byrne, 1986. Again, it's the Superman equivalent of the Batman Year One. It's once again after Crisis on Infinite Earths, when DC decided to modernize their heroes. John Byrne, coming off an extremely successful run on the Fantastic Four, DC was able to lure him away, and he had carte blanche. He could do, you know, whatever he wanted with Superman. And some of the choices he made were controversial and not necessarily liked by fans, but there's no arguing with the fact that he did something influential, long-lasting, and for a huge number of, for an entire generation, probably two generations of comic book readers, this is the Superman that they know. Much less powerful than the Superman that came pre-crisis. You know, he lowered his power set, made him less powerful, therefore made him more relatable. And the 6-issue miniseries really is the start of it. It gives you a good feel. It's a good, great starting point. If this is the Superman you want to learn about, change the dynamic of Superman and Batman's relationship with each other. Just a really, really great story. And I debated whether just to go with Man of Steel or the entire Byrne run, which lasted about 2 or 3 years. But I decided just to go with Man of Steel, basically because John Byrne left. Not exactly sure. He didn't leave on the best of terms. I'll just put it that way. He left some things dangling that were picked up by other writers. And so it's hard to know how much of what those writers did that came in were following the plan that John Byrne had, and how much they switched the things that he had or whatever. So I didn't want to, you know, it's too hard to say. So I'm just going with the Man of Steel, like the pure John Byrne idea of what Superman was going to be going forward. My next nominee, I'm going to go with the Dark Phoenix Saga. Again, I debated on this one whether to go with the entire Chris Claremont X-Men run. And the problem with that, just saying Chris Claremont, it goes into the 90s, and some of the stuff in the late 80s, early 90s, when the X-Men started blowing up in popularity and Marvel started putting out a lot of different X books, and things got convoluted, and, you know, all these different writers with different ideas, and it was hard to keep track of everything. And plus, if I say the Claremont run, it doesn't cover Giant Size X-Men number one, because that was actually written by Len Wein. And Len Wein, he wrote Giant Size X-Men number one, and I think the first couple issues of the all-new X-Men, Uncanny or whatever they called it. I think he wrote like the first two or three. So I think you have to go from like Giant Size X-Men number one to like whatever issue 150 or 160-ish. Were the, those classic stories, some of the real classics were drawn by John Byrne, written by Chris Claremont. So because I couldn't differentiate, I went ahead and took the easy way out, which was to pick the Dark Phoenix Saga, which if you ask a lot of X-Men fans, a huge majority of them are probably going to say, here we go, Dark Phoenix Saga. That's, you know, the best X-Men story. It was really influential, really well done. Showcasing in the Marvel Universe that things don't always come up daisies, you know? It's not all puppy dogs and sunshine. The heroes die. The heroes make mistakes. The heroes kill. The X-Men don't even always get along amongst themselves. So, I mean, it's a classic story. And I couldn't not leave it off the list, just because the X-Men are such icons, you know, much like The Walking Dead and Superman and Spider-Man and Batman. Because of the movies and things, you know, a lot of people know who the X-Men are. And I think if you're a fan of the X-Men because of the movies, and you kind of wanted to get an idea of what the comics were like, the classic X-Men comics, I think reading the Dark Phoenix Saga would really give you a feel for that. The next thing I'm going to nominate is Invincible. I kind of thought maybe you would pick this one, Jaden.
Yeah, when I was thinking about him, I did think about Invincible, but I haven't really... I've read quite a few of them, but I haven't read as much as I would like to have read to recommend it here. But I definitely agree that it's a really good book. I love Invincible.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people comparing Invincible to what Amazing Spider-Man was back in the day. So, you know, a young teenage hero dealing with a lot of everyday life things on top of having all these powers, but kind of updated. And, you know, this was one I kind of debated because it's not... honestly, I don't think Robert Kirkman is the best storyteller, the best scripter. You know, he doesn't write the best dialogue. But he's a great idea guy. And the idea of Invincible, the overall plot of the story is really interesting. And I think it's definitely worth reading. Yeah, so I think it needs to be on. I think it needs to be on the list. I'm going to go with Daredevil Born Again from an X nomination. This one's on there for a couple reasons. We've already talked about how influential Frank Miller is. And this wasn't necessarily the story that put him on the map. You know, he had his Death of Elektra and his classic run on Daredevil earlier when he was first on the book. But that's kind of what put him on the map. But Daredevil Born Again is what made him like a superstar. What people were like, man, this guy's a master storyteller. And just based on the success of the Netflix show and how I feel like season 3 is probably, from everything I've heard, going to be the storyline for season 3, that I went ahead and put this on the list. Plus, if you are a Daredevil fan because of the TV show, I think that this storyline, more than any other, gives you an incredible feel for who Daredevil is as a character. All right, my next nominee is going to be Kingdom Come. Again, I was surprised neither one of you guys mentioned this. Alex Ross art, written by Mark Wade. So this is kind of like the Marvels of the DC universe. In fact, a lot of people think that it was, you know, because of the incredible sales numbers on Marvels, they think that's why DC did this, Kingdom Come, a storyline, and got Alex Ross to do the art. It's a much different story, kind of like the exact opposite of what Marvel's is. You know, Marvel's captured that innocent feel. Marvel's is told from the perspective of a non-superheroed person, non-superpowered person, kind of looking on and seeing these heroes and trying to understand how the world's changed that he's living in. Whereas Kingdom Come is all about the power. It's an Elseworld story, and it's all about the idea that these beings have so much power that they can do whatever they want, and is that right, and should they take it to the next step and take the law into their own hands and be like almost like gods among men. So an incredible story by Mark Wade, amazing art, and again, very, very influential. My next nomination is All-Star Superman. Now, I'm the first one to say I'm not a Grant Morrison fan. A lot of times I read his stuff and I end up shaking my head and being like, what? I just don't get it. And this is kind of an Elseworld story. It's not, you know, it's not in continuity, but Morrison does a great job of making the book fun and creating these awesome character moments. And he really captures like the essence of what Superman is. And I wish that Zack Snyder had read All-Star Superman like right before he started doing Man of Steel and tried to capture the feel and the tone, because there's I mean, it's Grant Morrison, but yet, who normally his books are kind of cynical and snide and meta, and he's, you know, making these commentaries about comic fans and the world we live in and kind of satire and making fun of everything. But man, All-Star Superman is just, it's so, even though it's not necessarily a positive story, it's just so uplifting. You know, he, as much as I don't like Grant Morrison most of the time, he really understands Superman as a character, that Superman is not Batman. He shouldn't be dark. He shouldn't be gritty. He should be this hopeful character. And it's just, it's a great book. It's a really, really awesome book. And then my last nominee is Ultimate Spider-Man. The whole run. I think it went up to 120 something issues. And then they stopped it and they had like a mini series and then it came back and they changed, played around with the numbering. But I'm just talking about like the first volume, like 1 to 128 or 127, whatever. Brian Michael Bendis, Mark Bagley, you know, great art. And the reason I feel like this has to be on there is because this was, and this is debated among comic fans, this is kind of the first book where it's that decompressed style of storytelling. So I don't know if, because like I said, this is debated. I don't know if you'd say, okay, Brian Michael Bendis, this was his style of writing, this decompressed. Because if you look at it, Ultimate Spider-Man, the entire story that took place in Amazing Fantasy 15, the origin of Spider-Man, takes place in one issue, right? Brian Michael Bendis in Ultimate Spider-Man takes that story that happened over one issue and spreads it out over six issues. Six issues, that's about the size of a trade, right? So, like I said, there's debate about it, whether, you know, that was just his style of writing. You know, he takes a story or an idea and he spreads it out further because then he gets to have more dialogue and more character moments, and that's, you know, that's just his style of writing. And it just so happened that he came along and shot to prominence right around the same time that comics started going more mainstream, and so they needed to put more trade paperbacks out so they could sell them in bookstores like Barnes and Nobles and Borders and things like that. So some people, you know, say that's a coincidence. Some people look at it the other way. The whole reason that they started going into trades and doing all that kind of thing was because it got so popular. And so they blame Brian Michael Bendis for, you know, stretching stories out too far and things like that. So I feel like that needs to be on there as well. So that's our list to this point. Obviously, we're going to have to do some paring down. Anything that either one of you guys thought of while the rest of us were talking that you want to throw on there? Like, Manny, do you want to put Scott Snyder's Batman on there?
Yeah, actually, it's on the top of my list. That's why I didn't read it. Somehow that got mixed in with the Killing Joke.
All right.
So yeah, Batman New 52.
Batman, okay. Yeah, like I said, I was surprised that you didn't have it on there.
You know what else I had on here is Batman Hush.
Hush. All right.
Yeah.
So we know why you're putting New 52 Batman on there. Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo. I think it's going to go down as one of the seminal Batman runs of all time. So I don't know if we need to say much more about that at this point. But why Hush?
I just enjoyed it. And especially more than anything, Jim Lee's artwork on there.
All right.
But, you know, I hear so many people that's one of the first ones they read. Yeah, in a graphic. So I think
the thing about Hush is it managed the overall story, you know, it was over 12 or 14 issues, whatever it was. And it managed to touch on so much. I mean, that's the thing. You can read just the Hush storyline. You don't need to know anything that came before, anything that came after, but it touches on so many of the classic Batman rogues gallery of villains, you know, mm-hmm. So it really gives you a great overall idea of who Batman is in the modern world. So I, and yeah, Jim Lee art, what more do you need to say? All right, so we've got your, as I expected, your nominations are heavy on the DC side of things and on the Batman side of things. So
yeah, and then some of the things that I had, I did also have Blackest Night. That's my favorite Green Lantern storyline.
All right, what about you, Jaden? You have any others you want to add on?
Well, I mean, it's not very influential. I don't think very many people even heard of it. But Absolution by Christos Gage. This is a very... this is probably one of my favorite story arcs in all of comics, I think. It's super entertaining. It's really interesting. And it's definitely an adult comic. So I wouldn't... It's definitely not something I would recommend if you're younger. But I think the first arc of Absolution is just... It's really good.
Okay. Oh, all right. So what do we have here? We have 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. We have 31. So we need to cut 5. All right. If you had to take one off, Jaden, what would it be? And why?
From the entire list?
Yeah.
I'd probably take off Forever Evil because I liked it, but I don't think it's really, like, must read.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I love Forever Evil for the reason you love it, which is the crime syndicate, just because they're so cool, and it kind of did set the stage for the next year or so of DC storyline, like overall universe storyline coming out of that. Even to now we're still seeing the repercussions in Justice League with the Darkseid War. But I don't know that it's... Yeah, I don't know that it's that influential. And like what Manny was saying about Crisis on Infinite Earths getting thrown in the deep end of the pool, same thing with Forever Evil. Like, I think people would read it and be like, wait, what? Who are these people? Like, what's going on? But it doesn't have the same long-lasting effect. So it's kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I would take that off. That's a book I'm going to need. I only read it as it was coming out. Actually, I read the first couple, and then I waited until it was all done because it took so long.
Yeah, that really plagued that book. Those, yeah. Goddamn.
But I think it's something that I'll go back and read later, you know, when I can read the whole thing together.
Yeah.
And plus, I think, like I said, because we're still seeing the ramifications playing out in the Justice League book with Geoff Johns, who, you know, writes Justice League and wrote Forever Evil... Knowing what Forever Evil is going to eventually lead into, like knowing that complete story, will help Forever Evil in the long run, I think. Yeah, but for now, yeah. What do you think? You agree, Manny? It comes off?
Yeah. It wasn't. It missed my list for that reason as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, Manny, now your turn to nominate one to be chopped here. What do you think? By the way, that was my number one pick to come off the list as well, Forever Evil. But it gets harder now. That was the only one that really stood out.
Just because it's not, I mean, it's not as influential, I guess. I'm gonna take off Moon Knight.
Yeah, that's the other one I was kind of thinking. And I think part of the reason I would say is just because Moon Knight has had so many different takes on the character. You know, he's one of those characters that different writers have tried different things. He's not so iconic and so well known that, you know, he always returns to a status quo. He's had so many different status quos. And so it could be kind of confusing, especially to a new reader. I mean, it's a great, you know, those first six Warren Ellis issues are great. And then I remember who it was. So it was Warren Ellis on the first six, I think, or first five. That's what it was. The first five were Warren Ellis. And then... Brian Wood came on for 6 through 10, and then like 11 through 14 or whatever was Cullen Bunn. So yeah, they are great reads, especially because they are all one and done. You don't need to know anything that came before or after, but yeah, it could be kind of confusing to a newer reader just because, like I said, there's so many other takes. Now I have to cut one. Let me see. By the way, if somebody disagrees with one that's being taken off, please speak up, because, you know, we're here to debate this. This isn't a cut and dry, or, you know, like I said, we easily could have gone like top 50 or 100 and filled out the list, no problem. Man, for some reason, the one that's sticking out to me, and I have a feeling you guys might both disagree with me on this, is Harley Quinn.
And I was looking at that one. I really like the book. I think it's a really good book, and I think maybe in the future, if it keeps up how its pace right now, that it's at right now, it might be something, but I don't really think that it's like something that you have to read right now. I mean, yeah, they're really good, and I love the art, but and the covers are amazing.
But on the other hand, Manny's right. It is, I mean, she is a pop culture icon. She's gotten to be super popular, and she you got to admit that what Jimmy and Amanda have done in that book has been influential, because between that and what the creative team did on Batgirl, that was the whole reason they tried the whole DCU initiative.
Yeah.
And got away from the dark and gritty. I mean, it didn't necessarily work, but it was the step toward where we're coming to now with the rebirth. So for that reason, I think it should stay on. But then on the other hand, I think it's a book that is very popular among people that are already comic fans. You know what I mean? I don't know how. But then again, it's, you know, it's got a huge female following, and it has brought a lot of people in. So for that reason, you know, and the whole reason we're making this list is to get care. I don't know, man.
I mean, it has a lot of spin-offs also that do really well. One-shots. And,
yeah, and it's about, you know, like I said at the top before we started doing the list, it's not the most, you know, even though we're talking about influence, because, and I talked about wanting to give someone who comes in a sense of the history of comics, it's also about getting people hooked. And clearly that book has reached an audience, so, yeah, I can't decide. So what do you, okay, let's bottom line it. Manny thinks it should be on. Jaden, you think it should be off?
I'm in the middle. I could see it. I can see the argument for both sides.
Yeah, I can too. So I'm in the middle, you're in the middle, Manny thinks it should be on there. I think we gotta leave it. Oh man, so we still gotta cut three though. Let's talk about Absolution. Great, great, great book. Again, I feel like it's
I don't think it reaches a wide enough audience for really to recommend for everybody.
Yeah, but again, it's something that's adult. It's a good story. It shows what the medium can do. I mean, I like that it's not, that not necessarily everybody knows it.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? We don't have Clone on here, and we don't have Think Tank on here. We have nothing by Matt Hawkins. We all love Matt Hawkins, but we have no, like, Think Tank was one I considered, but look, here we
are. I love Think Tank, but I don't think I would give a Think Tank book to somebody who's never really been into comics that much.
Yeah.
I think Think Tank is something I'll recommend on, like, the second wave of books maybe I'm recommending to them after they've read some of the titles that are on this list.
Yeah, and you know what other comic just popped into my mind is Letter 44, which I have given to someone who wanted to get into comics, and they loved it.
Yeah, actually, when we went to WonderCon, I convinced Rudy to buy all three of the volumes. So, yeah, that's one I'm always preaching about, too.
Yeah, here we are. And Irredeemable is another one that we're going to do a spotlight on pretty soon.
You know, what are we doing? Adding or subtracting?
I know, man. It's so hard. It's so hard. Okay, we're not going to add any more on. But those are... I had to mention those. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, let's talk about... I feel like we're Batman heavy. What should we take off? Maybe we should take off the Killing Joke. I mean, I understand it's influential in as much as it informed a lot of what came after. But, I mean, if somebody wants to learn about Batman, I feel like having the New 52 Batman on there is more important than the Killing Joke, just because Scott Snyder, clearly the Joker is in a ton of his run. You know, Joker is one of his favorite characters. And so I feel like you get enough of it in the New 52 Batman run. And so we could take the Killing Joke off. I don't know. What do you think, Manny?
I think maybe from that perspective, this is another one of those that, you know, once you read the New 52 or you read Hush, you read some of these other titles, then you give them the Killing Joke. And it probably has a little bit more impact just because you get more of the sense of Batman's, you know, justice. and it'll hold its weight a lot more, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, what do you think, Jaden?
I think, I don't know, I like the Harley Quinn, I could see the case for both sides, especially with New 52 Batman on here. I mean, I do think that we are Batman heavy, and I think that you'll get a lot of the Batman feel from the New 52. I think that's about what Batman feels like today, like in the movies and everything. I think it's about what people would be expecting. And I don't know, I think the Killing Joke is something you want to be a little bit more invested in the characters.
All right, coming off. Sometimes the cuts are tough. It's a tough one. I mean, because I think if we were just doing influential, it would be on there for sure. It would be on
there. Did we take off Absolution?
I left it on there.
Oh, okay. No, I just wanted to know because I'm.
Yeah, it's on there for now. We're still too heavy. Let me go down what we have. And if you think there's one that we should talk about, let me know and I'll make a notation so we can go back after I go through the whole list. Okay, so we have Crisis on Infinite Earths, Marvels, The Walking Dead, Watchmen, The Dark Knight Returns, New 52 Nightwing First Arc, Flash Rebirth, Blackest Night, Harbinger, Thief of Thieves Volume 1, New 52 Justice League, New 52 Harley Quinn, Archer and Armstrong from the most recent iteration of Valiant, Valiant's Bloodshot Trilogy, so that's Bloodshot, The Valiant miniseries, and Bloodshot Reborn, Death and Return of Superman, Fantastic Four 1 through 100, Amazing Spider-Man 1 to 125, Batman Year 1, Man of Steel, Dark Phoenix Saga, Invincible, Daredevil Born Again, Kingdom Come, All-Star Superman, Ultimate Spider-Man, New 52 Batman, Hush, and Absolution. Nobody said anything about making a notation. Our list is 27. We committed to doing 25, so we have to cut two.
I think, I don't know, I mean, I could see, I really love Invincible, but I don't know if I would necessarily be, I mean, it's a really good book, I don't know, I think that one is sticking out to me. I think Flash Rebirth is sticking out to me a little bit.
Yeah, Invincible is the one that's sticking out to me on the list.
Yeah. I mean, it is for me, and it is because I like the fact that we have some independent stuff on here, you know, because some people don't necessarily go in for all the, you know, oh, it's Marvel. I got to read so much to get, you know, to understand what's going on in the DC universe. You want to know what's going on in Invincible? You only have to read Invincible.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, I go back and forth. I go back and forth on it. But if both of you, I mean, but this is, you know, we're doing this by majority. So if both of you think it needs to come off, then I think we'll cut it. Is that your final answer?
I mean, if you come up with a counter with, that's better. I think that.
Why? Well, I just think it. I mean, the reason for it to come off would be it's not that well known. I mean, that's basically the reason. It's not that well known. It's not, you know, the best dialogue. You know, like I said, it's more the big overall ideas of it. And it is enjoyable. Yeah. It is. I mean, the people that like it really, really like it. And, you know, it's not a book where people jump in and out. Like, if you're an Invincible fan, like, you're in. You know, whereas other stories like, oh, you know, maybe people drift in and out on a Incredible Hulk title or Daredevil or something like that. But no, Invincible, you're in or you're out. So
maybe it should come off then.
Okay. We'll take it off. So we got to cut one more.
I can kind of see Jaden's point also on Flash Rebirth, because I would think you would want to have them read something else with the Flash before that.
Yeah, I was kind of lost when I first started reading it, so it might not be the best standalone thing to read.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I hate to take it off, though, because it is so iconic. And if you've read Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know the heroic death of Barry Allen, and this is him coming back.
Yes.
So, I mean, for that reason, I kind of think it should stay on. I mean, that's not something you'd recommend to somebody and say, okay, this is the first comic you should read. I mean, you'd be like somebody who maybe is a fan of the TV show, you know.
Or maybe like second wave of comics after they've read a few things.
But I'm saying if somebody's a fan of the TV show and they want to get into the comics, you can say, okay, so Barry Allen died saving the universe. Here's the story of how he comes back. I think that's all you would have to tell him, and you could give him that story. I mean, I think it should stay on. I think it's an incredible story. I think it, you know, much like Daredevil Born Again kind of sums up who Daredevil is as a character, Flash Rebirth sums up who Flash is as a character. And I think even if you haven't read anything else, if you gave that to somebody and just told them, Barry Allen died in this story called Crisis on Infinite Earths, saving the universe, and this is the story of how he comes back, that's all they would need to know. I mean, what about it that had you so lost when you started reading it, Jaden? Like, you didn't understand, like, Speed Force or what?
Yeah, and I wasn't reading, like, any comics at the time. I just kind of picked up this trade and read it, and I didn't really understand why Barry Allen was dead and all this stuff, because all I really had seen him in up to that point was the cartoons and stuff, so... went back and I knew a little bit more about the character.
So, if you would have known that he had died in Crisis on Infinite Earths, saving the universe, that it would have helped you out.
Probably.
You would have understood. All right. Well, what do you guys think about Thief of Thieves?
I think that I would, like, if I'm introducing somebody to comics who is standoffish about comics, and I was like, hey, just give one book a chance, like, it'll take you 5 minutes to read a couple of, like, one of these, and I swear if you don't, I bet you'll get hooked. I think I would pick Thief of Thieves. But so that's my argument for it. I can see why it could come off. I mean, it's not influential. It's not very well known. Like, the art's not amazing or anything, but
I think it's super entertaining. I don't know, man. That book's incredibly consistent, very cinematic. Yeah, I think it has a place on the list.
I haven't read it, so I can't give my opinion on it.
Yeah, same thing with Archer and Armstrong. You know, somebody who likes, you know, comedy, witty banter. So I think that needs to stay on there. I don't know. There's got to be one of mine that doesn't necessarily belong. I mean, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 9. I have 9.
Can we take away like 50 of those Fantastic Four? No.
it still takes up a spot. I have 9. So I have the most. I don't know. Maybe Man of Steel?
I haven't read it, so I can't really speak to that. I've heard a lot about it.
Well, I look at this. So we have 3 Superman. We have Man of Steel, we have All-Star Superman, and we have Death and Return of Superman. Death and Return of Superman, pretty iconic. All-Star Superman, again, it gives that sense of positivity and hope. But then, again, the Return of Superman kind of gives that, too. I don't know, maybe those two are redundant. Have you read All-Star Superman, Manny?
No, I haven't.
Man, I wish you had read it that way.
I have. Yeah, that's kind of the reason why I had issues. I don't have issues with the cinematic Superman because I haven't read enough Superman.
Yeah. Well, we got to cut something.
So maybe Man of Steel, since you're the one who was considering it, I think that all of these probably have a lot of merit in them, but yeah. I think that you could probably get both. You can get probably the feelless Man of Steel somewhere in between All-Star Superman and the Death and Return of Superman.
Yeah, well, the thing about Man of Steel is it gives you the origin of that Superman that's in the Death and Return of Superman. But again, like we were saying, maybe. It's second wave, you know. You read Death and Return of Superman, and then you want to know, okay, well, how did this post-crisis Superman, how did it start? So let me go back and read it. Okay. I mean, as much as I love Man of Steel, I think we can cut it. All right. So that's 26. Crisis on Infinite Earths, Marvel's The Walking Dead, Watchmen, The Dark Knight Returns, New 52 Nightwing First Arc, Flash Rebirth, Blackest Night, Harbinger, Thief of Thieves Volume 1, New 52 Justice League, New 52 Harley Quinn, Valiant, the most recent Valiant's Archer and Armstrong, the most recent Valiant's Bloodshot Trilogy, The Death and Return of Superman, Fantastic Four 1 through 100, Amazing Spider-Man 1 through 125, Batman Year 1, The Dark Phoenix Saga, Daredevil Born Again, Kingdom Come, All-Star Superman, Ultimate Spider-Man, New 52 Batman, Hush, and Absolution. I think that is a damn fine list, gentlemen.
Yeah, it looks good to me.
I think that if somebody had not ever read a comic and we said, okay, read this, you know, read all these books, even if they decided not to be a comic fan and never to read another comic, they would be kind of well-rounded and be able to, you know, talk comics.
Yeah.
And, you know, be like, yeah, you know, I've read this and, yeah, Walking Dead or Amazing Spider-Man, yeah, I, you know, Superman, sure, I've read The Death of Superman, yeah. I think it's a really, I'm pretty proud of this list, I have to say. What do you guys think?
I think it's really good.
Hey, I'm proud of you guys also keeping Nightwing on there. I was actually afraid you got Jace was gonna try to take it off for some reason.
You know what? I think that the reason I didn't even think about taking it off is because it Kyle Higgins being such a huge Nightwing fan and taking that book with the launch of the New 52, he did such a great job of capturing the essence of who Dick Grayson is as a character. And there's so many comic creators working in comics today that cite Nightwing as their favorite character. And, you know, look at our numbers on downloads of episodes. Our most downloaded episode is my interview with Tim Seeley about Nightwing. He's Dick Grayson is such a huge fan favorite, you know? I mean, yeah. I would almost think there are more people who love Dick Grayson than there are people that love Batman. You know, and Kyle Higgins did such a great job of capturing the essence of the character, and I think that's why that should be on there. Yeah, I had no problem with that whatsoever.
Great.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. This is a pretty long episode, which I figured it would be. So thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again for all the support. Our numbers are up across the board, and we appreciate that support. And we'd love more support. So if you have friends that want to get into comics, let them know about this list. Have them follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. You can also like us on Facebook. Follow us there. Just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. You can also find us on Instagram. Just do a search for Comic Source there as well. You can also go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. You can find previous episodes of our podcast there, a sketch gallery. Manny and I both have a written blog there. You can use the contact us link there to get in touch with us. Let us know what you think of our list, what we forgot, what we left out, what you disagree with. Give us your list. Tell us why you picked what you picked. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Later.
Good night.